Welcome to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Our annual forum features Chapelboro's movers and shakers debating the big issues affecting our community and you. And it begins now.
Welcome into the final hour in what has been a long day of broadcasting here at WCHL. This is the final panel of our WCHL Community Forum. 9 hours of broadcasting throughout the day, all leading up to this, of course. We appreciate everyone listening in throughout the day and all the panelists that have participated, but we're very much looking forward to this panel. All day we've talked about issues in our community, and we've had community members and elected officials participating. We're devoting our last hour to hear just from the community members that are out there every day dealing with the issues head on from the ground up, if you will. And we are very excited to have Dolores Bailey, Executive Director from Empowerment, Michael Reinke, the Executive Director of the IFC, Maggie West with Community Empowerment, and Bonnie Hauser, who is, which of your affiliations would you like me to insert here?
Oh, we could throw a bunch of them. There's Orange County Voice, there's Project Engage for Seniors, there's Title I Schools, there's the Northern Orange NAACP, so there's a lot of them. We can keep going.
There are a lot to include there. We appreciate everybody joining us here, and we have a community that is always regarded as very educated and a fluent community. And yet we have many in our area that are dealing with issues that just never cross the mind of so many as we go about our day. We get ready for work, we go and we drop the kids off at school and then pick them up on the way back home, and you know, kind of live in that bubble from time to time. But this is why we wanted to talk about other issues in this final panel with all of you that deal with it every day. We'll start with Dolores, and we'll go around the table here of talking about what the biggest issue that you see kind of on a day-to-day basis is relative to that other standard that our community can kind of feel at times.
I think one of the main problems is when we travel in that bubble that you just mentioned, we don't recognize that there are true differences and there are people who are suffering in Orange County, and that there is a huge divide, and it continues to grow. I think we're losing a large part of our minority population because they can't afford to be here. I think there is another African-American minority population dying or leaving, and another minority group, the Karen and the and Burmese, that are coming, but I think are experiencing the same differences, and we don't look at the disparity. We get in that car every day, we don't realize there are kids that go to school without being able to eat. Mm-hmm. There are moms and dads who want to work but can't find jobs. I think it's we don't recognize the problem. We don't want to. Some don't want to.
We'll move to Michael Ronka. Same question there.
Oh, well, I couldn't agree with Dolores more. We were actually talking earlier today about how Chapel Hill, Carrboro is a beautiful place. And if you drive up Martin Luther King Boulevard, especially when the foliage is out, you might not notice that there are 3 gas stations and 2 banks on the way from Franklin Street to Weaver Dairy Road. But at the same time, that same foliage will hide the trailer parks and the dilapidated housing that people are living in. We live in a beautiful community, and oftentimes that really hides the fact that 17%, more than 17% of the residents of Orange County are living in poverty, that nearly 21,000 people are food insecure, meaning that somebody in the household is skipping a meal so that somebody else can eat. And that's something that we really need to face, to confront, and to address.
Maggie West, moving around the table.
Sure. I mean, I agree with both Dolores and Michael. I think what we can be blind to as a community, and what there's a risk to be blind to, is that, for example, I was meeting with a woman today who works part-time at Moe's, the new Moe's on Franklin Street. Mm-hmm. But is about to lose her apartment because the unit was sold out from under her and is going to be renovated probably to be more luxury student housing. And she, in the meantime, is having to, like, shuffle caring for her children, getting them to and from school, getting to her new job, and now trying to figure out another place that she can live where there's very little affordable housing for her to actually move into. So I think many of the people that we walk by or that serve us food or that take care of our children at daycare or that work on our campus or in our hospital can't afford to live in our community, and that should really bother all of us.
Yeah, it's something that is continuously a part of the discussion here. And Bonnie, we'll wrap up our opening comments with you this
week. I feel humbled with this group because this group
understands our low-wealth communities in a way that most of us don't. But what I see is that we're relying on politicians, we're relying on program coordinators to tell us about these communities. We don't know these communities. And so we tend to make it about us versus them. So we have to help them. We don't treat them like they're our friends, like our neighbors. It's not we, it's us versus them. And I think it's time for us to move, and particularly Orange County, for us to move to a thing where we're talking about we.
And we always like to talk about, you know, market Orange County as the progressive and just inclusive area, but it does feel like it can be a segmented county at times as well. So, Dolores, you mentioned noticing that there is a problem, identifying it, and how important is it to take it from that step and not only have these conversations, but then to own that problem as a community?
I think a part of this is there are a lot of people in Orange County that have a really good heart. And so we start by, number one, identifying that there is actually a problem, and then you identifying what your part of that can be, the solution can be. So if you have children and you take your children to school every day, be cognizant of the fact that there are some children in that school that aren't eating. So you can't know who they are, thankfully, but you can talk to the administration and say, is there something I can do? If it's about a job. And I've had people who have businesses and are looking for folk to hire, but very rarely do they go out on the street and go, I'm looking for somebody to hire. Maybe I'll get in touch with Community Empowerment Fund. Maybe I'll go down to CEL and find someone in the community or around the community that needs a job. So we have to figure out ways that we, if we care, can be a part of the solution. And I would promise you that there is something you can do, I won't say every day, but let's say once a month, that can help someone.
Michael, I want to ask you this question as well, talking about so many of these things tying together. And I know that whenever we've had discussions, as you're still, you've been here for a while. How long have you been with the IFC now?
Actually, with 8 months.
8 months. So you've been here in the community and really starting to see that. I'm curious what your assessment of everything is with a bit of fresh eyes on Orange County is.
I do think that we tend to look at problems in silos. We tend to say, oh, well, this problem is just this problem. It's not connected over here. Again, I'll go back to hunger just for a moment, that we look at seniors, people who are over age 65 that are food insecure, and they are 62% more likely to have a heart attack. They are 54% more likely to experience depression. They are 40% more likely to experience congestive heart failure. And, you know, quite honestly, I would much rather provide a meal to somebody than pay for all the medical care that's associated with dealing with heart issues. But we don't tend to think about the whole person. We tend to say, okay, well, there's just this issue over here. I think that there are some pretty big, pretty important problems that we're facing as a community that we can actually address if we start saying, what is the overall number, and then how can we make a difference? Another example would be if you look at the Chamber of Commerce, they recently had a community conversation, and one of their slides talked about affordable housing. And they identified how many units of affordable housing we had for extremely low-income individuals back in about 2000. And then they look at how many units we have today. And over the course of this past 15 years, we have lost almost 50%. We've lost almost 800 units of affordable housing for extremely low-income individuals over the past 12 to 15 years. That's a huge issue. And it's an issue that we need to face as a community altogether, but it's also an issue where all of us can play a part. So if, for example, it was easier to do an accessory dwelling unit for an individual,
right,
then somebody that has, you know, maybe a half an acre of land could have an apartment out back that was affordable. The faith community, local units of government, institutions of higher education could all play a role in making sure that we have enough affordable housing, which would include workforce housing for people who, everybody who works in Orange County should be able to afford to live in Orange County.
I think that terminology there is one thing that people continue to run into maybe the same issue with whether it's, is it affordable housing, is it workforce housing? What does affordable housing mean? It obviously changes a lot to a lot of people. So, Bonnie, whenever
there's something baked into what you were talking about, Michael. And if you take housing in particular, is we have a tendency to throw money at housing, a penny for affordable housing, a bond for affordable housing, but we never really solve the affordable housing problems. We don't change the regulations that are stopping us from putting those accessory units on. We have areas in the county where we have sewer infrastructure. It's zone 1 acre minimum. We could put a lot more housing on that. That's affordable. It doesn't require a subsidy. It requires a change in the rules to allow more affordable housing. Trailers. There are trailer parks with empty pods because they can't afford the fees to put another trailer out there. I mean, these are the kinds of things where we are in our own way as a community, and they're the rules. It's, again, we keep throwing money at problems, which makes us even more or even less affordable rather than solving the real problems, and partly because we're not talking to the people that we are intending to serve. And I assure you, they are not showing up at county commissioner meetings or town council meetings and speaking for 3 minutes, because that's not where they're wired.
Maggie, you've been nodding along and writing some notes over there, so I'm curious what you're thinking.
Well, what I'm thinking actually is we don't throw enough money at affordable housing is actually what I think.
Interesting.
And that the tendency that Bonnie was naming has really, at least especially in the last couple of years, has been new dollars for affordable housing, recognizing the dire situation that the county is in terms of the penny for housing and the bond that is proposed and will be on the November ballot for affordable housing, are new dollars to solve a growing and dire problem. And I think while there are places where policy can have an impact, like Bonnie was saying, and that's true, where policy can allow for more affordable housing development without as much subsidy, there are parts of our community where subsidy is required in order for affordable housing development to really be possible. So I just want to say that I think while their policy can make an impact, policies that support additional funding is also really important right now in this community.
And Michael?
I firmly believe that where we spend our resources is a reflection of our values and priorities. And so if we think that affordable housing is important in our community, then we should be spending money on affordable housing. That said, I really believe in setting goals. So it's interesting, I read an article recently about Connecticut, and every town in Connecticut has a goal of making sure that at least 10% of the housing in its community, whether it's a wealthy community or a low-income community, at least 10% of the housing in every community is affordable for very low-income individuals. And I don't think that that's such an unreasonable goal. I think that if we set a goal that in Chapel Hill, in Carrboro, and across Orange County, we wanted to make sure 10% of our housing was affordable, that if we set that goal, we can achieve that goal.
Bonnie.
Those goals have been set, but they're not being achieved here. They're not being achieved in Durham. I mean, the goals are being set, but what's happening is the housing prices are going up. And I'm not suggesting that we don't spend money on housing, but until we fix the policies that are making our housing unaffordable, throwing money at it makes us feel good, and there are policies that are interfering with our housing, because Michael opened us up and said even though we've had the penny for affordable housing for a long time, we're not getting more affordable housing. That's the problem, is that it's not coming.
Maggie.
Well, we've only had the penny for affordable housing for, I think, one funding cycle year so far. And that did produce new units of affordable housing. So I think it has been an important new source of, like, support. I can't quote that off the top of my head. Dolores might know better than that number.
Couple, right?
I'll tell you before it's over.
Yeah, we'll look it up while we're here.
It's enough that she can count it.
Dolores, I did want to ask you about something else that I know we've talked about before, and it was commonly known as the Section 8 vouchers, and I don't know what the actual terminology is.
Housing choice vouchers.
Okay. But the reluctancy of developers to accept that, how does that play into the overall issue?
That is huge. I hope everybody knows about GSC, which was a very large commercial landlord who about 3 years ago decided to stop accepting housing choice vouchers, which affected about 90 families then, but it started a domino effect in other landlords also changing their policies and not accepting housing choice vouchers. It is not a protected class. So when we talk about how affordable housing is diminishing, and it's because of that. If you talk to, and I have talked to Dwight Bassett, and ask him what affordable housing really is, if you talk about affordable rentals, when you build affordable rental units for students, that's one thing. When you build affordable rental for the person that bags your groceries and takes care of your child, those are different numbers that we're looking at. So it is significant. Let me go back to the stereotypes. We got to hold on to something that separates us. And there's a lot of misconceptions about people who have housing choice vouchers. They're not bad people. They're not all poor. They're not all without jobs. That's simply not true. Empowerment owns 40 rental units. 85% of our tenants have housing choice vouchers. We do not have a problem keeping up with the rules and regulations from the government. We get our check every month. They live in their units, and they are fine, and we are fine. So we've got to let that go.
I would say we could just shut down the rest of the hour, and I feel like let Dolores go on that a little bit. Bonnie, did you have something?
No,
oh, okay.
No.
I thought you had. What about something in like the Northside neighborhood where you had a loan come in from UNC, a no-interest loan, to try to keep the housing in that area from completely being bought up and then flipped into student housing, those kinds of rentals, and then Habitat for Humanity has been able to go in. Do we need just more of those kinds of collaborations? I mean, if everybody's just handing out million-dollar no-interest loans, that's a fantastic thing, I guess. But do we need more of those, or what do we need to kickstart more of that? Maggie?
I can take a stab at it. I think what's been really successful when you look at in the Northside community has been community-driven collaboration. Mm-hmm. So the neighbors are really driving the process there, and leaders like Dolores at Empowerment and the Jackson Center and Self-Help Credit Union working together has really driven that collaboration alongside like historic neighbors in the community. So I think as you look at different pockets of Orange County, things that really center the existing residents and historic neighbors and center their interests and priorities is definitely like the best way to go. But then the way that community nonprofits and governmental agencies have been brought in a sort of all hands on deck, like all moving in the same direction approach, has also been a definite sort of best practice, I think, from that effort.
And so the question for me, is that a one-time shot, or can mm-hmm. we take money from other entities, from other private developers, and work in other areas of town? And do we only say Northside gets the money because it's a historic community, and it is, and it's worth saving? Can we do that with other communities? And if this is the only place where we can do that, that's sad. It's a wonderful thing that we are doing in Northside, and I absolutely agree with Maggie. It takes, you know, us all working together, but can we do that same thing in Pine Knoll? Can we go over to Estes? Can we do it on the other side of Macaulay? Can we do it? Can we create that kind of land banking is what it's called.
Right.
And it is preserving communities, and it is preserving housing like we never could have done before. Empowerment never would have been able to get money to buy three or four houses at the same time, which is what the land bank is able to do and hold on for us. But there are also other pockets of Chapel Hill, Orange County, that mm-hmm. same thing needs to happen. Who can be that funder?
And we have seen a little bit of money come in on top of the loan that was given from other entities, which is nice. But, Michael, yeah.
Well, I would like us to be looking at different ways that we can be looking at generating revenue, or that financing can become available so that there can be more affordable housing. So if a Fidelity or a Quintiles or some other corporation like that comes and talks to a community and says, we want to have our corporate headquarters here, oftentimes that community will say, okay, well, you know what? You're going to be doing some investment in our community, so we're going to give you some tax relief mm-hmm. in order to make that possible, right? And so I would like to suggest, you know, what is so different about a community or a property owner saying, I'm going to make sure that 25 units, 30 units, 50 units of my housing is affordable workforce housing, so that people who are working at UNC, at Chapel Hill, or teachers or firefighters, they can afford to live in our community. And if that landlord makes that kind of commitment, then maybe they should have some kind of tax relief to help support that economic decision. I had a chance to talk to Chief Blue the other day, Chief of Chapel Hill Police Department, and he said that he could count on one hand the number of police officers who were able to afford to live in Chapel Hill.
Last I heard, it was two, and one of them was him.
That was my understanding as well.
So if you take a project like Shelton Station, right, where they're putting in 96 apartments, and the larger apartments, the one and two bedroom, 20% of those units will be affordable, workforce affordable. No subsidies, no money from the government, all done through a density bonus on the project. That's the kind of market solutions that can really change the game. You know, if I look at Eflin, where we've spent literally millions of dollars in sewer, but we've not changed the zoning. We're still running with 1 acre minimum zoning, and we could certainly go into density. We have two schools up there. It's close to Mebane, where there's jobs. And certainly it would be a great place to put workforce housing. There's already there's three habitat communities there already. There's several trailer parks. I think the community would like some workforce housing, but it would be a great place. Again, these are just examples where regulatory changes can move the needle. Not that we can't make investments and have a couple of houses, but we can really move the needle and create a diverse community by creating places for housing that embraces different kinds of people, right? Because, you know, we tend to solve these problems in isolation. You know, I'd love to see housing that has every, you know, it's like intergenerational, you know, different economic levels. It's more interesting to live in communities like that, and how do we start to create that and look at the rules that we have to create that. And I just, if I could segue, you know, healthcare, transportation, education, public education are all pieces of that too, you know, so how do we pull those all together and create communities where everybody thrives?
I think that was a bit what Michael was talking about earlier, not working in silos, correct? Mm-hmm. Is that,
right.
Do you see, have you seen other examples of places that do that? Maybe better than we do at this point, that we could build off of and steal from a little bit?
Well, I think there are examples all over the country of people who are looking at, you know, integrating, you know, the problems that we face in terms of poverty. We tend to look at it as one individual person. We may say, oh, here's a person who can't afford a place to live, who's homeless. Here's a person who is unable to make their budget stretch throughout the week. So they need food assistance or something like that, when really there's a whole lot of public policy problems that go into what happened, that this community doesn't have enough affordable housing to it. So I think that, you know, you tend to look at, say, how do we look at things regionally? So it's not just a Chapel Hill Carrboro problem, it's an Orange County problem. It's actually not just an Orange County problem, it's also an Orange County and a Chatham County problem, and it's also a Durham issue, because I believe that Chapel Hill actually straddles at least Orange County and Durham County, and may even go a little bit into Chatham County as well. So that all of those counties are involved. So we're talking about regional planning. We're talking about saying we need to be thinking together, not just as Carrboro, but as all, you know, not just as Eflin, not just as Chapel Hill, but all of these communities coming together. So one example that works really well is actually, if you look at it, Portland. Portland has some really good regional planning, talking about how do we preserve rural areas that people can go out and enjoy their bike ride or their hike through the woods, but also have housing that's meeting the workforce needs of the community. It'd be one place I would turn to. And again, I would go back to Connecticut, where they said every community needs to have 10% of its housing be affordable. I mean, if we just set that goal, that every town in Orange County, 10% of our housing would be affordable, I think that'd be huge.
Just the act of setting a goal?
The act of setting a goal and then saying, can we meet it? And meeting that goal is going to take a whole variety of different players. You know, you'd have to bring institutions like UNC to the table. I mean, they're huge. They're one of the largest employers, I believe. UNC and UNC Healthcare are two of the largest employers in the state. So they'd have to play a role somewhere. But it would also be the individual property owner, again, thinking about what can you do to add. If everybody adds one more unit, then we pretty quickly get to that goal. Communities of faith. I had a chance to talk to Reverend Don Jones, who's with Amity Methodist on MLK, and he said, you know, they have, I believe, 5 acres at that location. Nobody's committed to anything, but, you know, what if a little bit of that land became senior housing for perhaps even seniors going to Amity Methodist? Or I know Lisa Fishbeck, who's the priest over at Church of the Advocate, is interested in how can they do tiny homes for people who are low income on that, on the property that Church of the Advocate sits. So it's a lot of different players coming together, but certainly you need the big rocks in the bucket if you're going to fill up the bucket.
Well, we've got a lot more to get to. We haven't touched on transit yet and connecting the areas of people that need those coming from affordable housing areas to make sure they can get to their jobs without having to rely on their own transportation or even some of the improvements coming to the Rogers Road neighborhood. So we've got a lot more to get to here in the WCHL Community Forum and our Community Voices panel as we are wrapping up the day. We've got more to get to after this.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Summer is rapidly approaching, and fall will be here before you know it. Need some extra courses to help you prepare for college? Need to complete your high school diploma or get a GED? Looking for training or certification to help you get that dream job? Classes begin May 16th, so visit durhamtech.edu and search summer registration. Schedule a meeting with an academic advisor who will give you access to our web registration system. You'll be amazed at the great selection of interesting courses you'll find. And get ready to do great things.
Having healthy teeth and gums is an important part of overall good health. The Orange County Health Department is one of few health departments in the state that offers dental services to both children and adults. Our services include exams, cleanings, fillings, and extractions. We offer a wide variety of payment options, including cash, check, credit or debit card, Medicaid, Health Choice, and private dental insurance. Call today to schedule an appointment at 919-245-2435.
Welcome back to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government. Once again, here's Blake Hodge.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum. It's shocking how it always, the debate even seems to liven up a little bit once we go to break. Everybody's off the hot mic, I guess. Dolores, what you don't know is we were actually recording everything during that.
Well,
break.
I appreciate that because people have learned something.
It always is interesting to see that happen. But now that we're back on the air, everybody's got their hot mic voices back on. Then what? You know, whenever we're talking about, we've spent a lot of time on housing so far, of course, but there are a lot of other, you know, poverty rates, and then we're talking about not everything being just in a silo. So many things are connected, but, you know, not having food before you go to school and then not doing as well in school and then having discipline issues in school and kind of the cycle going there. Michael, I want to go back to you for the start on this, because with the IFC and so much going on to help feed kids through the summer and all that, where do you want to start?
Well, I've seen, you know, food is one of the things that we really take for granted. I unfortunately can't see all of your listeners from right here, but I'm willing to bet that if I asked every listener to raise their hand if they had a meal today, probably almost all of them would. And for that matter, if I asked every one of them if they'd had 3 meals today, I can tell you that it's likely I'm going to have 3 meals and maybe even a snack. But again, unfortunately, 21,000 residents of Orange County are food insecure. And what's even worse about that is that 25 to 30% of them are children. Children disproportionately bear the brunt of the impact of poverty. And as anybody who's had to skip a meal or two can tell you, you know, it's harder to focus on work. It's harder to get through the day. It's harder to do your homework. It's much more, if I have missed lunch and I'm kind of making my way now to dinner, it's much more likely I'm going to be kind of snappy by the end of the day than if I've had lunch and I'm feeling pretty good. So actually, there's something, I think that there's going to be an announcement coming out next week, next Wednesday, so I don't want to step on that announcement. But I can tell you that I know that the mayor of Chapel Hill, Pam Heminger, I believe she was a teacher at one point, and she is well aware that there are many kids in our community who are receiving free and reduced lunch. In fact, actually, 3,500 students going to Chapel Hill Carborough schools are getting free and reduced lunch, and that's just the kids 5 to 18. Right. There's also kids younger than that that are also eligible, but they're not going to school. And so we can say, wow, that's a pretty huge issue. And there are organizations like certainly IFC, but Table and Porch that are trying to help those kids during the school year. But what happens to those kids between June and August? Right. And unfortunately, for far too many of those kids in our community, there hasn't been a great way to get food assistance, hasn't been a great way to get lunch or breakfast or snacks and things like that. So, again, the mayor convened a conversation. I believe this was back in January.
She talked about it a little bit this morning on the our opening panel. So
there you go. Yeah. Okay. From that conversation, I think that we're now a variety of community organizations have come together, again, including Table, Porch, IFC, and so many others, to say, how can we get kids access to food over the summertime? And I believe on next Wednesday we're going to be able to announce a plan. So,
we'll eagerly await the details there. Bonnie, I wanted to circle back to you on this where I know we've talked a little before about disproportionate rates of a lot of things in the schools, whether it be achievement or discipline numbers or any of that. Whenever you're hearing kind of this part of the conversation, how does that impact any of your thinking on those fronts of these kind of feeding into each other?
I think obviously it's really important to feed the kids, and during the school year, the kids are generally being fed, and that's what the kids are generally being fed. The question is, why do we still have a big achievement gap for kids of color? Why do we still have a big achievement gap for kids of low income? We are generous with our schools. We have good schools, but not if you're in one of these buckets. And so feeding the kids is great, but I think we're successful as a community if we're all thriving. The affluent people aren't just thriving and throwing money at the people that are not so affluent. Everybody's thriving. And so we're not paying attention to the achievement gap in schools. We talk about it, but we're not measuring. We've not set any goals to shrink the gap, and it's become a big issue. So how do we really set high goals for ourselves? So that's kind of where I go.
So I can't let you say that we're not doing anything about it. The school system tries. It's just not working.
Okay.
So I think they have tried years and years. And as a parent of two young women who have come through the Chapel Hill Carborough school system, I am as frustrated as I can be about it, that the achievement gap exists and it continues to grow. But they have tried. My solution, I think, is they've got to stop doing what they're doing. It's not working. Whatever they've done in the last few years.
Agreed.
So I have to say that one piece. But what hurts me, hurts my heart even more, is why in an affluent community like Orange County do we have a 16.8% poverty rate anyway? It's not just the education that there's a big disparity between. How in the world are we living with that kind of poverty in this community, with all of the education power that we have here, with all of the money that we have here? How is it that poverty continues like that? I think one of the things is, after we work together, IFC and all of us sitting here at the table, and Empowerment and the Family Success Alliance, which is the new Orange County initiative against poverty, if we can't figure that out, we can't figure out the minority achievement gap. number one. So what are we going to do about this poverty thing? And you're right, Michael, we can feed those children during the school year and they're not going to get anything at summertime either, but there is a problem with that. Bonnie, you know it and I know it. That I'm not telling you anything new, but if the listeners were going, I didn't realize the poverty rate was that high, I want you to know it. It is, and it's growing. And if you didn't know there was a minority achievement gap, which nobody who has children in the school system can possibly say is true, then you need to know that too. And I want to go back to what you said. We as a community have to come together on the solution. It's not necessarily the money that gets thrown at it. It's absolutely the heart. It's people getting out there, putting their hands to it. If I don't know what the drive is that you guys are going to announce next week, but if that means somebody during the summer is going to take some food over to Hargraves Community Center, or they're going to bring it to Empowerment, they're going to bring it to Empowerment Community Empowerment Fund. If you're saying that that's going to happen, I think that's a wonderful thing. So maybe where we start is the food piece.
You know, it's funny. If I was starting my life again, I would go into the business of poverty, because poverty is really, you know, it's this thing where we throw money into it and we don't expect anything out of it, because it's not one little simple solution. It's many different problems that we're trying to, that we care, we really do care about it. There's no question that we care about it. But part of the problem is employment. You know, are we providing people with access to good employment? Now, the county has this Work First program that I'm really excited about, where they're helping people with skill development. That's great. The Home Builders Association is planning a new training institute for trade skills development. These are the kinds of things that are really exciting about developing better skills for people so they can get better jobs. Transportation, we don't have. So if you have a better skills for better, you need a second car if you want to get a better job in Mebane or RTP or someplace, or Chatham, where there's more jobs. So there's so employment is a big deal that is going to take a lot to solve, right, as a short term.
Yep.
Well, I want to follow up on what both Bonnie and Dolores have just said in terms of that things are not working, and I would agree. I would say that we've been doing things pretty much the same for the past 40 or 50 years, and one of the words that I would like to introduce into the conversation would be innovation, that it's time. I mean, we think about whether it's Apple or anybody else, you know, wow, that company is being innovative. I had a chance to talk to Neil Kenny Geyer, who's the CEO of Mercy Corps. They do a lot of relief overseas. And he said, when you're thinking internationally, nonprofits, NGOs are being innovative because they have to be. And I said, well, that's interesting because I don't really see it here in the United States. He says, yeah, you haven't seen it here in the United States yet. But I think actually when we look at CEF, I'd be interested to hear what Maggie's approach on this, just because I look at CEF as saying, okay, we're going to try some innovative approaches. We're going to see what works. Some of them have worked. Some of them, they said, okay, we tried that. Didn't work so well, so we're going to move on to something else. But I think that we need more models like that, more ways that nonprofits can see themselves as being innovative to solve these problems that have been around with us for far too long.
Maggie, do you want to respond to the...
Yeah, I mean, I guess just to build on the conversation, I think... when you talk about the achievement gap, when you talk about really any kind of cross-system issue, for me, the term that comes to mind is really a whole person, whole family approach. So when you think about achievement and families below the poverty level being lower than families above the poverty level, we should probably work not just with the kids, but really with the parents and how what the parents have access to. And I know that some of our school system folks do that. And I think in terms of innovation, our best experiences are when we get to bring unlikely allies into the room together. So an example is some work through the Orange County Partnership in Homelessness with an alternative to jails and alternative to sentency program called Outreach Court, where the DA's office really looked at, why are we criminalizing homelessness? Why are we... And what I mean by that is, why are we charging people with offenses that really they're being charged with because they are homeless?
Right.
So whether that's, just like out drinking outside, open container, things like that, they wouldn't be doing that if they had somewhere they could be doing that inside. So why is that becoming a criminal offense that then makes it harder for them to get employment, get a house, like really change their situation? So working with the DA's office and the mental health system and mental health clinics providers and street outreach workers and the faith community and county government and some really great judges, NCEF is a part of that, really looking at how we can create alternative programs that don't just send people to jail, because that's not good for anybody. Nobody wins, and the taxpayers don't win. Just nobody wins. So really looking at how unlikely allies can work together and take a different approach. And Outreach Court has been pretty successful as a program at creating alternative pathways that don't result in new criminal charges on people's record, and that create collaboration between the court system and the criminal justice system, and all kinds of mental health providers and nonprofit providers. So things like that that I think, and I think you can do that in all kinds of spaces and not just when it comes to criminal justice. And I think that's sort of what Michael's talking about, is really looking at something from root causes and from ground zero, and not saying the way we've done it is the way we're going to keep doing it if the way we've done it is not working.
There's another program staying in the court system a little bit, with the misdemeanor diversion program that was just introduced. And I believe they started taking references just a week and a half ago, maybe, and to keep 16 and 17-year-olds from misdemeanor offenses, whether it be misdemeanor marijuana possession or whatever the case may be, out of the adult system, littering, literally quite anything. 16 and 17-year-old in North Carolina and New York were the only other state where they would automatically go into the adult system. So they're trying to keep them out a little bit. Dolores, you were talking about that a little bit here. Just whenever you see initiatives like that, what can we do to capitalize on some of that momentum that we do have sometimes?
I think part of our problem is we don't spread the word well enough. My whole problem, I love the initiative that James Williams was able to help happen for the 16 and 17-year-olders, and my immediate response was, how are we going to tell the parents so that they know that their young person doesn't have to be treated as a criminal? And part of a lot of initiatives that happen don't filter down all the way through the community to the lowest level of the community so that everybody can benefit from it. So if there's a 16 or a 17-year-old that I happen to be around, then I'm going to say, do you know your rights are protected? And, of course, sometimes the police officers often feel like the kids should know it already, but they don't. And it's not their fault, like you're saying, Maggie. If they're out on the street, they don't know. And so one of the problems with the initiative is being able to spread the word. And when you look at how you spread the word to the communities, then you have to look at what access people have to communication and how is that working in the homes. And it's not in those lower-income homes. It's not.
Well, one thing that we were talking about a little bit off the air while we were in our break was connecting the affordable housing areas to places via public transit, where they can then go to their place of work without having to have a car, or maybe only one car rather than having to have a second car. So, Bonnie, I know transit is something that you've looked at a lot in terms of making it work the best for our area. So,
Can I just hold on that for a
minute? Sure.
Dolores' comments are just so resonating with me that we have, I believe in Orange County there is no shortage of resource, but we have real shortage of access to resources. So the people who need the resources aren't getting them. They don't know. If you have a child with a drug problem, they may end up in the emergency room. They don't. People call 911. They don't know how to get the child into the right place. We don't know. People don't know what to do with the problems that we have, because we're so, it seems to me, and I'm listening all day today, we like to congratulate ourselves on all the great things that we're doing, but the people that need the help are not getting the help that they need. And so there's probably, thank you, Dolores, that's probably the most important thing that I've heard in a long time. And transportation is, I want to keep going on that, too. I think there's a little seed in our community that I'm really fascinated by, and that's the Rogers Road community. Because they've decided, and they've mobilized after 40 years of fighting with landfill, but they have mobilized a community-based resource that people are stepping over backwards to help. But there's no question who's driving that bus, and there's no question who's running the show over there. And they are connecting with their community and people are coming in to help, and they're running their own food banks. They're controlling their key, and it's truly a community building initiative. And the programs, and I congratulate David Caldwell is now trying to take it to Efland and Cedar Grove, but he's quickly learning that those communities are in very different stages of development. They communicate differently. They have different needs. They have different assets that drive them. But are we rich enough to try and do community building approaches like that, where we can start to bring the resources? And the second seed that I love, maybe I'm talking, the second seed that I love is what IFC did with the health clinic and the homeless shelter. Because the county right now is planning to spend millions of dollars to expand their dental clinic at Southern Human Services Center, and sit there and go, maybe we should try and bring health resources into our communities in a partnership with Piedmont Health. These are the kinds of innovations, I think, that you're talking mm-hmm. about. It means moving into relationships where we can partner with some of the great agencies that are working in our community, rather than have a government that's operating in one silo and not-for-profits that are operating in a separate one. And if we did those things, if we did real community building initiatives, now back to your point, it alleviates some of the demand on transportation, because the people that need resources don't have good access to transportation. And our public transportation system isn't really going point to point unless you're going to UNC, you know. So now I'll stop.
Michael, I'd love to hear a little more about that. This is something that Bonnie's brought up several times about the work with Piedmont Health. So can you just give us a little?
Absolutely. So for many years, the Interfaith Council operated a free clinic at the community house at 100 West Rosemary. And in the planning for the new IFC CQ community house on 1315 MLK, we said, you know, the clinic that we had at 100 West Rosemary was pretty bare bones. It had an examining table that, you know, may have gotten its start in life back in the 1960s or something like that. And it only had one examining table, only had one room. And we now, in the planning for the new building, we plan for three different clinic rooms, as well as two different full-service dental chairs. And this right now is serving not only the single men who are staying at the community house, but also serving the single women and women with children who are over at Home Start. And this is a population that typically has had a harder time accessing health care. Doing that in partnership with Piedmont. So we're not, you know, volunteers are wonderful, but if you can say, okay, you're actually paid to be here on these given days, you can count on the person being there, and you can count on there's going to be a really great quality there as well. So it's a wonderful partnership, and I think it's something that we would like to see more of. You know, we're going to be looking at how do we bring together our community kitchen and our food pantry under something called Food First, and if there's a possibility to have a space for Piedmont there as well, I think that would be a really exciting opportunity and development.
Well, Dolores, you wanted to talk about some of the good things that are happening in our community. I hate that we've kind of, I don't want the wording to sound like this, but we're coming down to the last few minutes here, so we definitely want to interject that into the conversation. So what's on your mind that has you very excited about the possibility of tackling these major challenges that we've got?
I think the only reason we are all at this table is because there is hope here. There's a lot of things that are wrong with Orange County right now, but we work at it so hard because we believe things can change. And I believe we have a heart. I believe people in Orange County have a heart, and some of them just don't know what to do and how to do it. But I would like to encourage us to realize that working with any of the nonprofits that are sitting at the table, Empowerment, CEF, IFC, the Chamber of Commerce has a nonprofit roundtable. Ultimately, I want to say working together is where we can make things happen and have a real change. There is also a nonprofit called Third Sector Alliance, which is actually a coalition of a lot of nonprofits that receive funding from Orange County. We work together. We share resources together. We talk to each other. We share problems and situations. And that's how we change, with my rose-colored glasses on, that's how we change Orange County, is whatever you can do, don't think it's small, just do it.
Well, Michael, I don't know. We'll go back around the table. And
yeah, I really like the emphasis on how we can actually make a difference. I think that too often times when we talk about these social issues, we say, well, it's awful and it's getting worse.
Right.
And there are some ways where that's true. But there's also some ways where we really have been able to make a difference. And one example, at least we can look at over the last 5 years, is they do a point in time count of how many people are experiencing homelessness in Orange County. And if we look at it 5 years ago, we had 30 people at one point who were homeless and were unsheltered, meaning they weren't staying in a homeless shelter. They were just staying out on the street somewhere. 5 years later, with the work of a lot of people, especially around this table, that point in time count has gone from 30 down to 15. Now, that's 15 people too many who are sleeping outside, but it's still that we've been able to make a drop, 50% change, 50% decrease in the number of people who are unsheltered. That's huge, and that's something that I think that we can continue to make progress on, and is a great example of how we can make progress on all of these different issues.
Maggie, we'll go around the table to you now.
Sure. I'd love to jump in with some ideas for your listeners if they hear this and really want to do something. My like shameless pitches are that if you are listening and you own property or you manage property or you know somebody who owns a property, then you can accept vouchers, you can accept subsidies. You don't have to be specially certified to do that. And we have a dire need in our community for people willing to accept housing choice vouchers or permanent supportive housing vouchers or veterans vouchers. If you work somewhere or if you're an employer, then you can work with your company to try to be able to accept applicants who have a conviction history. So giving a fair shot to people who have served their time, sometimes more than their time. If you're a member of a faith community, you can think about what Michael said earlier and really think creatively about what your resources are as a faith community to do something creative to address some of our community's challenges, whether that is building an accessory dwelling behind your church or multiple accessory dwellings or senior housing, whatever it is. I think it's really time to be creative and all of us to do what we can do. If you are a resident of Orange County, you can vote for the Affordable Housing Bond in November. It's going to be on everybody's ballot, and you should vote for it. And if you just care and you don't know what to do, then I don't know, you can call me.
Call empowerment.
Call any of us.
That
like,
was gonna
we'll
be
plug
it.
You
we're,
into
we're
something.
We're going to make one more round here of everybody being able to give out the if you were wanting to get involved with this hour, then you can contact them. Bonnie, we'll round out this part of this discussion with you.
Just a couple of things. One is, you know, it's a big deal with seniors and not seniors to serve them, but we have this new force of seniors that are committed to volunteer in our community as tutors. We're, as part of Project Engage, we're visiting 200 homebound seniors in the county. We're bringing them food. We're helping them with ramps in their houses. We're doing stuff with them. And we're not doing it from a place of charity. We're doing it from a place of community, which it really makes people much more receptive to the support. But I would be remiss if I didn't go down the measurement route, because we don't measure it. We don't talk about it, and we don't measure. We are obsessed with our recycling, but we are not obsessed with our achievement gap. And so we don't measure, we don't talk about it, we don't want to. So let's start talking about these things. Let's not be afraid of it. I call it the Weight Watchers approach. You know, you have to get on scale once in a while. And let's see how we're doing, and let's congratulate ourselves for improving on these things that we tell ourselves are important.
We'll go in reverse order, so we'll stick with Bonnie here. Who would you, if somebody's listening and wants to go get involved immediately, maybe someone outside of the table right here, since they'll all have a chance, who would you point them to get involved with as the best starting point?
It depends, you know. Right. If you want to get involved with seniors, I think Project Engage is a great place to go. And Yvette Misery over at the Department of Aging is leading that. It's a community-based initiative. Or Archie Daniel, who's part of, who's doing the visitation program, homebound program. There's a program, the schools, any of the schools could use volunteers and help. The list is endless. I think pay attention, because more things will be coming.
Maggie, if somebody is wanting to get in touch over at Community Empowerment Fund for services to get involved, what do they need to do there?
Yeah, they can just call us, 919-2000-CEF. Or email us anyway. Our website is pretty easily searchable, but communityef.org, and can definitely get involved. And like Bonnie said, there are countless organizations and initiatives and projects going on in the community that people can get involved in and other places.
Well, Michael, I know y'all are moved around a little bit from where people may be most familiar with you if they've lived in Chapel Hill for a long time, but and a lot of different things going on. But how would you encourage people to get in touch with IFC?
You know, I would definitely encourage people to visit us on the web at ifcweb.org. They also could, of course, call us at 919-929-6380. But I'm going to make an even broader pitch, perhaps a little bit shamelessly, but I'm going to encourage every member of our community to take a look at your annual budget, to take a look at what you're giving to charity, and think about how could you increase it just 10% more. And by that, I don't mean to IFC. I of course, love and welcome it to IFC, but I mean to any organization. Take a look and say, you know, this year, last year, I gave $1,000. How could I give $1,100? Because I don't know a single nonprofit organization in this community that has either too much money or too many people. There is so much that we could be doing right now, and if people can come together and be part of something that's bigger than themselves, it will make a huge difference.
Dolores, your turn.
My last shameless plug. Yes. Empowerment is turning 20 years old this year. Great, wonderful community service to communities all around Orange County and Chatham County. So I'm going to piggyback off of Michael. Think about making a donation to a charity that you love, like Empowerment, any one of them that you like. But I think that one of the key things is to do look into your budget and see what you can do to help.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
That is going to do it for not only this hour of the WCHL Community Forum, but all 10 hours of the WCHL Community Forum that started what feels like a couple of days ago at 8 o'clock this morning with the Town and Gown panel. We thank everybody so much for participating in this panel. Bonnie Hauser, Maggie West, Michael Reiga, and Dolores Bailey. Thank you so much. And to all the panelists throughout the day and to all the listeners for sticking with us here on WCHL. It was a long day, productive day, a lot of good conversation here in our community. Thank you so much. And we will have all of these re-airing over the next couple of weeks and being on the website, chapelboro.com.
This year's WCHL Community Forum has been presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks again to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzu Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government.
Hi, I'm Dwight Bassett with Chapel Hill Economic Development, and we're thrilled to be the presenting sponsor for this year's WCHL Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open to business and open for business every day of the year. Follow us on Twitter at @CHEconDev. Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the triangle.
Hi, this is Don Rice, owner of the Molly Maid in Chapel Hill. The thought-provoking conversations taking place today on WCHL represents what this community is all about. The panelists are committed to making our community great, just like we are at Molly Maid. For 18 years, our family has been serving yours. My wife, Kathy, and I are proud to employ almost 40 people, doing our small part to keep our community vibrant and, of course, clean. As we support WCHL Community Forum, we hope you'll support our locally owned business by visiting us at mollymaid.com.
Ready to try something new this summer? Check out stand-up paddleboard yoga and fitness with Maria Finnegan Fitness. SUP yoga and SUP fitness classes are offered throughout the Triangle. Maria offers both indoor and outdoor sessions with summer classes beginning in June. Monthly classes as well as private bookings are available. This is a great idea for team building and corporate events. To learn more about SUP yoga and fitness, please visit mariafinnegan.com or email maria@mariafinnegan.com.
Kidzu Children's Museum in Chapel Hill is proud to sponsor the WCHL Community Forum because of the way it informs and empowers all community members. We like to do the same for children and families, nurturing curiosity, creativity, and self-directed learning. We call it inspired learning through creative play. With programs and experiences for children, infant to tween, and the adults who care for them, Kidzu Children's Museum at University Place in Chapel Hill, your community's resource for learning through play.